and welcome back to What Page Are You On? I'm Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my co-host,
Alice Slater,
to give you yet another installment of Quality Book Chat. We are talking this week not about a specific literary theme or any books in particular, but reading, our reading habits, what we read, how we read them, what we do to the things we read, and whatever else we come to. So let's get going. Hit me, Alice.
As the YouTubers say, let's dive right in.
Yes.
Although they never say that without a lot of preamble first. Okay, so reading books. My first question is, how many books have you read so far this year, and how do you keep track?
So I can tell you exactly how many books I have read this year because I write them down in my diary. I have a diary which is not like a Heather's Dear diary. It's a week-to-view diary that I get bought for Christmas every year in a different colour. And in the back, where they just have some, like, lined pages, I make a list of what I've read so that when it comes to the end of the year, I can look back and
reflect
on what I enjoyed, what I didn't enjoy. So this year, I have read 60 books. Alice?
I am on 75.
Are you now?
I am. I have just started using Goodreads to track my books. And on Goodreads, you can set up a reading challenge for the year. So I've challenged myself to read 100 books. So I'm a little bit behind schedule.
Yeah.
A little bit concerned I might not make my target.
But also, it's more important to enjoy the books you read.
Exactly.
It's quality, not quantity.
Exactly. But I also keep track. I have a master file on my laptop. I've been keeping track since 2009. So I have every book I have read since 2009 listed.
Yeah.
Including rereads.
That would be so good for me to have. I have them, but they're all in the back of my diaries that I don't get rid of. So they're
really
around
you
somewhere.
Keep them. So I have to throw them away because I'm too much of a hoarder.
Yeah.
So what I used to do was keep track like you in my diary, but then every sort of month or so type up into my master list what I've read. Whereas this year is the first year that I've given up on the middle stage.
Yeah.
I just have them either on Goodreads or in the master list.
The reason that I first started recording what I read was because I think when I finished my education, I was, which must have been kind of 2013, I was like, okay, cool, now I actually have time to read what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try and read 50 books this year. So that's when I started writing them down so that I could keep track of how many I'd read.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I do write them down because it really helps with, like, recommendations and, like, yeah, trying to think about what I've enjoyed that year.
And yeah. It just helps to keep them in my head as well.
Yeah, agree. So I like my sister. I like writing it down. Talk to me about Goodreads because I just... It feels too spammy. I don't want to get any notifications about anything ever.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess it depends on how you use it. So I really do just use it to keep track of what I've read.
Yeah.
You do kind of have to give books to be part of the reading challenge. You have to mark books as when you started, when you finished them, to make sure they're included in the right year.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is actually accurate, but I found Goodreads really difficult to navigate around at first. And I thought I could only log a book by year if I also reviewed it.
Okay.
Which can just be a star rating, but I really don't like star ratings. I just don't think they're helpful. So I found that quite irritating, like having to give things a rating. Now I've discovered that maybe I don't have to. Maybe I can actually just put the year in. But now I have a star system that I'm happy with, so I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't get many notifications.
Okay, cool. I don't know why. I just felt I got it into my head that, like, it was just opening me up for a world of notification.
Yeah, it's
pain.
Not like LinkedIn.
Okay,
you
cool.
know? But I do also find, like, I don't write reviews on there.
Mm.
I know the 5-star reviews are really helpful, so I'm quite generous with my positive reviews,
yeah.
as I am with most things, really. Like, I'm always quick to fav, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Well, as I said on Twitter, Beloved by Toni Morrison, which we discussed in the previous episode, has 12,500 one-star reviews on Goodreads. So I would take any negative Goodreads reviews with a pinch of salt.
That's it. Like, I don't... But I just don't read reviews on Goodreads.
Yeah.
What I do enjoy doing, however, is looking at books that I've read and enjoyed, or maybe not enjoyed. I like to see if anyone who I follow has reviewed it.
Yeah.
Because there are people like Blair from Learn This Phrase, who is just...
Ex-Live Journal.
She's so good. I mean, she's brilliant. We have such different taste in books. Yeah, I absolutely love her reviews and I love seeing what she's reading. So I'll always, like, if Blair's reviewed a book that I've read, I will always read that. But I don't read what other people write. Fuck them.
Yeah, that's just...
Not pointless. Interested. Although sometimes one-star reviews are really funny.
Yeah.
There's some
Except for when they're, like, about Beloved. And
then it's like, yeah, fuck off. Yeah. I actually did read a one-star review for Beloved by a man called Michael. And it opened with, as an author myself, I was like, get the fuck out, yeah. Michael.
What the fuck do you think can tell Toni Morrison about writing?
Nobel Prize-winning Toni Morrison. Get the fuck. Good luck with your career. Anyway.
Good luck with your blog.
Question number two is, do you read one at a time? Or do you like to jump between books?
I read one at a time. Mm-hmm. I don't have room in my bag for more than one.
Yeah.
And also, or in my brain. I'm a simple beast.
See, it depends. If I have to read something for a thing and I'm not particularly enjoying it, I might then have like a little side hustle going on.
Yeah.
Like a little something spicy.
So I have now moved into an alternative medium side hustle, which is listening to things on audiobook as like a kind of palate cleanser. Because I sometimes have to read books for this podcast. Like, I can't not read them.
Yeah.
So I view those as like my homework books, whether I'm enjoying them or not, and I generally do enjoy them. I also have like a thing that I chose to do, which often is my audiobook. So that's the only way that I ever have two things on the go at once, is if I'm reading one and listening to another. Obviously not at the same time.
Actually, thinking about it, it's because I'm technically reading the new Nigel Slater.
Your dad? Little,
yeah, my actual dad, Nigel Slater. People quite often ask me if that's true. I'm like, no. Of course it's fucking not true. I think it's because I used to say Nigel Slater, no relation. Mm. And when I got bored of that joke, I decided to take it one step further. So I'm reading that at the moment at like bedtime. I read like a little cozy chapter just to like center myself.
Yeah.
And also, in fact, a good little tip for you, you can look on Goodreads. If you look at what I'm currently reading, that is basically what my DNF pile is.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
It's only if I truly decide I'm never going to pick this up again will I move it to either just remove it entirely or put it as finished and give it an appropriate star review.
Interesting. So they're just lingering in limbo.
Yeah.
They're like...
So some of them like will be genuinely because I started them and lost the book,
yep,
or
left it on a train,
had to start reading something else and fully intend to come back to them.
Yeah, I have a couple of those.
A great example of that is Bleaker House.
Yeah.
I've not finished it yet. I will finish it.
Because it's great fun.
Yeah, it's just really good.
Bleaker House.
Especially coming into winter.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy like cozying up reading the last few chapters. So it's not necessarily indicative of a book that I've not enjoyed.
Yeah.
But...
So this is Bleaker House by Nell Stephens, not A Bleak House by Charles Dickens, Bleaker House is a great banger.
Okay. Do you push through to the end? Oh, very relevant. Do you push through to the end no matter what? Or do you sometimes give up on books?
I used to finish books and now I just think there are too many good books in the world for me to be able to waste my time reading a book that I don't enjoy.
My big thing as well is that if you force yourself to finish something that you're really not enjoying, you will never have that first reading experience again. And it might just be the wrong time for you.
Yeah.
You know, like you might come back to something later on when you're in a very different place in your life and suddenly really relate to it or suddenly really feel it.
Yeah, but I feel like I would know the difference. Like I don't know. I feel like I don't think of like, not finishing I don't know how to explain it, but I feel like starting a book and being like, I'm just not in the mood for this, I will come back to this later. That is different to me this is bullshit, I hate it, this is not a genre that I read, like I will never finish this book. I think will never finish is what I always think of as do not finish, whereas like, you know, as we were talking in the last episode about Beloved, like starting it, reading the first page when you're 16 and then coming back to it when you're in your late 20s, early 30s and reading it, I wouldn't say that I did not finish Beloved when I was 16. I think I just tried to read it when I was in the wrong place in my life.
Yeah, you're totally right. There is a difference. I quite often, I also, actually, you know what? I don't give up on books very often because I think I'm quite good at picking books.
Yeah, that's the same. Like, I feel like I always enjoy films that I see. And that makes me think, oh, am I a very, like, naive and undiscerning film viewer? But it's actually because I know what I like and I will not go and see something that I think I won't enjoy. And it's the same with books. Yeah. We have so many smart people in our lives, which I'm sure we'll come to as, like, recommendations, that I don't... There is almost no need for me to read a book that I don't enjoy. There's almost no need for me to even start a book that I won't enjoy.
And you're right in saying that I think generally I can tell... Even if it's a book I'm excited about. So, for example, I took a book on holiday with me that I was excited about. I don't want to be shady. So even though we don't tend to do this, I don't want to...
Yeah, that's okay.
Name and shame. But it's a book about witchcraft. Thought it was going to be great. I read about a third of it. It's so badly written that I pushed through because I was on a plane and it was the only book I had. If I had just read the first page before putting it in my suitcase,
yeah.
I would have known this writing style is not for me. I'm not going to enjoy it. Even
and this
if
is
the
valuable real
brilliant.
Estate. Like, that's valuable real estate in your suitcase that you
exactly.
then squandered. Ugh. I'm so sorry this happened to you.
I was furious, but it all worked out fine. I watched some good movies. So where and when do you tend to read?
So one of the good things about my life is that I hop on the Victoria Line on the first station at the northern end and I sit on it for 12 minutes and then I get off. So I don't even have to go through stressful central London. That's a good thing. But the bad thing is it means I have 12 minutes of sitting down time, which is basically when I read. So because my commute is now very short, I make time to read. So I will... If I don't go for a walk at lunchtime, I will stay in and I will read the book that I'm reading in the cozy communal area at my office. So I'm either walking or reading during lunch. And I do that for like a whole hour. Like I never work during my lunchtime. I always either use it for walking or reading. And then sometimes if I'm really enjoying something, I will like read it when I get home from work while I'm waiting for my boyfriend to come home from work or... So because I don't have that guaranteed sitting down reading time that I used to have when I was on the tube for longer, I have built in reading time to my life. How about you?
I'm the total opposite. I get on the tube at Leytonstone and I travel 45 minutes yeah. across the entirety of London to West London and almost always get a seat and I will read solidly for those 45
minutes.
It's
so good, isn't it? Like, I genuinely do miss it. I think if you can get a seat, a long commute can be a blessing for reading.
I would much prefer a shorter commute.
Yeah, because you have to get the central line, which is bullshit.
Hellish on every level. But you're right, it is like 45 minutes each way. So that's an hour and a half every day of just pure reading. And then also, like you, I have an hour for lunch and I do not look at a screen in that hour because my job is writing, staring at a screen. So I will read for that hour as well. So the minute I'm getting in like 2.5 hours a day.
That's so good.
Which is awesome. It does mean like I do not make time to read at home.
Yeah, but you don't need to.
Exactly.
I do it because I need to.
Like I will, and maybe, so like sometimes I'll try and read in bed because I do, you know, I'm a bit of a phone addict as well. And I have a bad habit of like staring at my phone. So sometimes to try and like get to sleep on time, I'll read a bit of Nigel or whatever my current like cozy bedside book is. But on the whole, yeah, I'm not the kind of person that like has a cozy reading corner in her house. Like my cozy reading corner is the world.
Anywhere is a cozy reading corner if you read hard enough.
But I do take my book to the pub from time to time.
Yeah. I like reading in like, I have a second office, which I can be found in if I'm not in my actual office, which is Le Pain Quotidien on Great Marlborough Street, the one opposite Liberty. I'm always there. So that is where I could also be reading.
Yeah.
hit me.
Okay. So what's your ideal reading session setup? And what I mean by that is, you know, when people take photographs on Instagram and it's usually like, a skinny pair of legs and like some long socks and they've got like a cup of tea balanced on a duvet, which freaks me out, with like an iPad, which I don't understand what that's doing there, with a candle that's lit.
You know, so like, they knock over the coffee, which then goes on their iPad, and while they're stressed about figuring that out, they push over the candle, which sets fire to their bed.
Exactly. It is a literal living nightmare, but people like that shit. So what would your like non-stressful reading setup be?
In the bath.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'd be in the bath.
Describe your scenario.
I'd be in the bath.
This isn't like a, and what are you wearing?
I'm wearing literally nothing. It would be a very bubbly bath. The other thing about reading in the bath, which is good, is that I also am addicted to my phone and I cannot have my phone with me in the bath because I will drop it. So I literally can't be distracted from my book if I'm in the bath.
So I actually totally sit in the bath on my phone and always think one day this is all going to end in tears. But so far, so good.
Okay, well, I'm not going to do that. But yeah, just chilling in the bath with my book and then using my very flexible toes to turn the hot tub on every so often. Yeah,
quite the image. Yeah.
Me naked under loads of bubbles but with like hands for feet.
And then I assume that you have on your toenails
the same fingernails.
Yeah, yeah, like the long spiky talons.
Yeah. That's why my feet are so big. It's not the feet, it's just it's the
nail
talons
space.
Where would you like to read?
So I also my two reading spots are the bath, but for me, I have a little stool that I set up next to the bath because I can't have one of those like
tray things.
Yeah. That's not gonna work. So I have a little stool where I have my phone and my phone, something to drink, either like a nice delicious can of cider or like a glass of wine. I like
such
my wines.
Mom.
I know. Then I like to light some kind of candle, but you can't read by candlelight.
That's too dark.
It is not like the 1600s.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to live that life. So I'll have a candle on the go, but it's really just for the aesthetic. Like, it's not
for the Instagram moment.
Yeah, it's for to Instagram my tattoo against the colourful water. So either I do that, and I have a two-faced mask routine when I'm having those kind of baths as well. I have like a Tony Moly sugar one that like just, it's like putting treacle on your face and it like melts in. It's just amazing. And then I'll do a sheet mask.
Yeah.
Mom's night. Yeah. Or pub, very ordinary, with a nice little pint, some salt vinegar crisps, a little window seat, nice and cozy, not too loud.
Yeah, you got to hope no one tries to chat to you about your book as well if you're in the pub.
See, that's what I find at work. Because now I've changed jobs, I'm not in a bookshop anymore. A, I don't know how to talk to people because my
you
small
don't know.
Talk for the last 6 years has been like, so what book are you reading? And also now I'm kind of, I think, being known as the person who's like always reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like the weird nerd of the office.
Yeah.
Your natural state.
Okay, next question. Do you reread books?
I do, but very, very infrequently. I reread my favourite book, What I Loved by Siri Husvett, once a year.
Mm-hmm.
After I read it when I was a teenager. And there is a bit of it that I found so upsetting that I could not reread it for many years because I was so scared of having to get to that bit again. And then once I reread it once, I was like, okay, I can deal with it. And I reread it once a year, you know, when I'm feeling feelings. But if I look at my list of books I've read this year, it's really mostly new things. I've reread, I think I've reread two books this year. So that's really not a lot. So 2 out of 60. Oh, no, I reread Art of the Floating World. That's 3. That's really not a lot. How about you?
So I am historically a big rereader.
Yeah.
I think particularly I remember as a kid, even though like I certainly was never deprived of books, I think I was just so hungry to read that I would obsessively reread. Like those are the books that I had. So I pretty much reread all of them constantly.
Yeah.
And I think as I went into my teens and my early 20s, I kept that habit. I never kind of lavishly spend money on books, so when the books I had, I would reread them, much like, you know, your VHS collection, you would just watch those movies all the time. So I've certainly, my favorite books from that time period I have read, as in like sort of early 20s, I've probably read at least 5 times a piece. So The Poison Tree by Erin Kelly, The Beach by Alex Garland, which I don't think we've discussed yet.
No.
It's one of my all-time favorite books. I know it off by heart.
We could have talked about it in the adaptations episode.
I know, you know, and it didn't even occur to me because the adaptation is so bad.
Yeah.
I just didn't even occur to me. We'll save it for like a summer reads episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So what else is there? Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides, and Oh, and The Secret History by Donna Tartt. Those five I have read at least three, maybe five times a piece.
I've also read The Secret History quite a lot.
Yeah. And I feel like there was a time where I would read all of those every single year. But, and I do find like with rereads, you do tend to read them quicker. It doesn't really matter if you lose your place or skip a bit. So yeah, I'm a big rereader. I am actually trying to reread less and be a bit more discerning with my rereads, because I feel like you either reread for comfort,
yeah,
or to like check back in with a book. And I'm at a stage now where I'm pretty confident with, when I talk about books I've enjoyed, I'm pretty confident that I can recommend them solidly. Whereas maybe the books over the last couple of years, I'm not sure if they're going to still stand up in my heart being like solid recommendations. So I need to revisit some of those.
So speaking of recommendations, I don't know if this is a question that you were going to ask in a different way.
I don't think so. Go on.
But who do you take recommendations from? How do you decide what to read? Are there specific people whose recommendations you trust?
So my mom, when I was teenager and in my early 20s, my mom was probably one of my biggest like kind of literary
influences,
along with a friend of mine that I had when I was working for Lush. My boss was a few years older than me, and she introduced me to The Secret History, to Never Let Me Go, Joyce Carol Oates, Poppy Z. Bright. She introduced me to a lot of the kind of books that I first started reading that kind of broke me away from my comfort teenage reads. Or like stuff that I had got onto from A-level English literature. And my mom also introduced me to a lot of the kind of books that I love now, like The Handmaid's Tale, Perfume, Rebecca. The thing is with my mom is that we bought her, hilariously, one year, we all, my brother, my mother and I, we all bought each other Kindles.
Yep.
The Kindle for me never stuck. We'll come up onto that later. But my mom really took to the Kindle. And we found that what we've lost is we can't talk about books in the same way. So she reads like something ludicrous, like hundreds of books a year.
Yeah.
She's a speed reader. She reads so quickly. With the Kindle, the titles and the authors don't stick in her head.
Yeah, because you don't look at the cover.
Yeah, you don't look at it every time you pick up the book. So she forgets what she's read. But also, she'll text me all the time recommending me books. But then I'll get to work at Waterstones and look them up and they're not available because they're
made up.
Kindle only.
Oh, right. Yes. I thought you were going to be like, she just remembered the name wrong.
She just lies, man. Yeah. She just makes shit up. No, so she'll read because she'll only spend 99p.
Price
cap.
Yeah.
So a lot of the books that she reads that are great will be either self-pubs or Kindle only or whatever. Or like, I'll look at the cover and just think, Gina, no, I don't fancy
what you
that.
Doing, man?
Fucking shit. So yeah, we've kind of lost that.
Yeah.
So although she still buys and recommends books to me, and everything that I do read from her has been banging, she recommended The Poison Tree
That's
to
so
me.
Interesting.
You know, like we've lost that kind of circulating paperbacks between us, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But whatever, like she's never felt more alive with her Kindle.
I'm so happy for her. I get a lot of reading recommendations, or I used to get a lot of reading recommendations from my dad, who has an enormous book collection. Most of the books in my now home are books that I have stolen from him. So I had, for a long time, when I was a teenager, when I was at university, because my parents live in London, I could just go home, pick up some books that I wanted to read and read them. So I didn't really ever need to buy books. And so he is a person from whom I accept recommendations because we have very similar tastes. But yeah, the tables have kind of turned recently because I have now, in the last year or so, got more friends in publishing. Mm-hmm. I now hear about things that I then tell my dad about, and then he reads them and is like, yeah, like Lullaby. Like I accidentally left my copy of Lullaby by Leila Slimani at my parents' house, and he read it and he was like, yep, banging. Speaking of my dad, I have a gift for you.
You don't.
Yeah, he was like, he enjoys our podcast. Shout out to my dad.
Aww.
And he thought if you liked Gilbert Adair's The Dreamers, you should read this, which is a closed book, which he says he doesn't remember loads about, but remembers loving when it was released.
Oh, this is so kind. Thank you so much. I'm excited to read it.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Thanks, buddy. And thank you. What's your dad's name?
Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Hit me with your next question.
Okay. Oh, well, I didn't actually answer the question as who I actually take recommendations from
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is mostly, I would say, so it used to be like booksellers at work. And I would still, I'd say Elizabeth Morris.
Yeah. Who obviously a mutual friend of ours.
A mutual friend who also is the events manager at Gower Street, Waterstones. Yourself, our friends Kish.
Yep.
Who works for Picador. But mostly now I'd say like my, the main people who recommend books to me are publicists who are going to send them to me, which works for me.
Yeah, and also like you and they both learn what you will like, because there's no mm-hmm. point a publicist wasting a proof on someone that is not going to enjoy it. So yeah. I feel like it will get to a point where like you'll both know what you want. Yeah, like you're someone whose recommendations I trust, so it's a good job
Likewise.
We do this podcast together.
Okay, next question. How do you mark your place?
If it is my book that I own, I will turn the corner of the page. I would rather not, but I don't always have something to hand that I can use. I would rather use a bookmark, which is always a postcard.
Absolutely. I'm a page turner.
Yeah.
Which is also why I don't borrow books from people very often unless I can confirm it's okay if I do that.
Yeah.
Because I can't keep my shit together to have a bookmark. I just can't do it.
It just can't be done.
Can't be done.
Yeah.
Not possible. I did have a really stressful reading experience recently, though, where I was reading a poetry collection that my boyfriend had already read, and he folds the pages to mark a poem that he wants to keep track of that he enjoyed.
No, that's so stressful.
It was so stressful.
Because you're trying to mark your page, but you also don't want to disrupt Alex's system.
Exactly. And thinking about it, I should have just, like, folded the bottom corner.
Yeah, I was just thinking that's what
you would
do.
Yeah, I didn't fucking do that. Ever. I was just doing as I do, and I just could never find my place, could never remember if I was just giving him a whole load of fucking
recommendation poetry things for him to come
so
back to.
It was a nightmare, but it's a habit that I just can't break, because I think my books are there to be read. I don't care if they get kind of bashed about.
Yeah, I'm very unprecious about books as artifacts, which I always thought was like a kind of heretic view, and then my kind of grown up, I have a lot of like child-free adult women role models in my life, one of which is one of my tutors from my undergraduate degree called Catherine, and she's very like demystical about like books as things, and once I learned that she was like chill about writing in books and turning corners and stuff, I was like, yeah, cool, that's fine, that justifies what I thought all along.
I think say the word demystical,
yeah, it's just
perfectly.
Shit, it's just stuff,
it's just like, a thing, it's just an object. It's the ideas within that's invaluable to me.
And I feel like that about writing as well. Like
Oh, God, so badly.
Yeah, like hashtag I'm writing.
Fucking like, stand the whole writers are special people.
Yep.
We see the world differently. I can't bear it.
And
it's
I think
such
that's
bullshit.
And I've said this before, but like I really think that's part of why, even though I literally wrote a whole novel, it took me such a long time where if a writer said, are you a writer? I'd say no, because I was like, I don't deserve it, because I just sit down on my laptop and bash some shit out. I don't like cry about it, you know. Yeah. I don't know, like, and it's
and
the same
I
want
to say
reading.
As well, like, I'm not actually, no shade to people who subscribe to these ideas. I'm not thinking about anyone in specific. It's just the kind of whole world of
fetishizing
the physical book and also the act of writing.
Yeah,
I just feel like I'm over it. I've just had enough of it. I also think it's really alienating for people who are coming to books or coming to writing a little bit later in life. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that kind of the magic of writing belongs to teenagers.
Yeah. Then grow out of it.
Keep it to the teens.
Yeah, because it's not something that you can't do if you're not magic. Like, writing and reading are things that anyone, if you want to do it, just do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not for a certain kind of person. It doesn't require a certain kind of like emotional or psychological burden. Like, it's just a thing. It's just a hobby.
Yeah, it's
a hobby. It's a nice, fun thing in your life. Glad we agree on that.
God, I feel so fucking liberated when I've said all of that. Do you use an e-reader?
Yes, I love my Kindle.
Your little Kindle.
I love my Kindle. So
what Kindle do you have?
I have a Kindle Paperwhite, which I believe is the best one.
Mm-hmm.
It is backlit,
Agreed.
So you can use it in the dark, in bright sunlight, because it has a matte finish and doesn't have a glare. I think it is absolutely wonderful. I love mine. I got a Kindle in the same year that I decided I wanted to read a lot. I basically got a Kindle the year that I finished my master's, because I bought it the first week of my first ever grown-up job. And it was a thing that I bought as a grown-up. And that coincided with, as I said earlier, reading for pleasure. And I wanted to read 50 books that year, blah, blah, blah. And I basically only did it because of the Kindle, because I was able... And I also think the Kindle enabled my abandoning books habit, because I share a Kindle account with my parents. And as I said, I share tastes with my dad. So he would just download stuff if it was like reduced in price or whatever. It was something he was interested in. So there was just so much stuff on the Kindle that I had no excuse for reading books that I wasn't enjoying. And yeah. I had so many books in my pocket. It wasn't like, oh, I've gone to work and I'm reading this book I hate, but I won't have another book till this evening, so I have to read it today. I could just like switch out for something I would enjoy more. So the Kindle has been really good for me.
See, I think the Kindle is a good thing.
Yeah.
As a bookseller, I am just so sick of hearing the kind of regurgitated opinion of like that Kindles are bad. I don't have time for that. I think it's really ableist. I think it's ignoring how the Kindle has opened up a world of reading
yep.
to people that otherwise could not read. I mean, large print books are almost extinct. They're really hard to get hold of. Audiobooks are often only kind of recorded for the bestsellers.
Yep.
The Kindle opens up any book to people who have difficulty reading small print. The Kindle also has an audio function.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it does. I don't know if they still do, but the Kindle that I had, you could set it, and it would read in quite a robotic voice, but you could do
That's better than nothing.
Yeah. So I'm really pro Kindle. It's just not something that ever kind of
worked for me. Yeah.
So I had my device. I remember I spent like a year using it with paper books. And I think really it was when I started working at Waterstones that, you know, 50% discount.
Yeah.
And so many free paper books.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't use my Kindle so much since becoming friends with a lot of publishing people who send me books.
Yeah. So I know, like, eventually my model became outdated. I think now it's completely obsolete. The software has died. So if you have a Kindle pre a certain date, they've all stopped working.
Mm.
So mine is now dead. R.I.P. I don't even know where it is. But I actually downloaded the Kindle app onto my phone when I was in New Orleans because I couldn't get hold of a copy of Less Than Zero for less than like $17, which is just mind-blowing. Whereas I could buy it for $4.99 on the Kindle. So I did that. And I actually found that reading on my phone was a perfectly comfortable way to read a book.
Yeah,
I'm in this habit of lying in bed scrolling through Twitter. This was particularly difficult to get out of in New Orleans because I could only use my phone when I had Wi-Fi. I'd often be out all day. So coming home to the flat was the only time that I could actually catch up online. But at like 10 p.m. in New Orleans, that would be like the middle of the night in the UK. So there was nothing going on my phone anyway. So I could just lie, scroll, read my book. And it was a really nice way to end my day. So I'm probably going to keep using my Kindle app. Especially when you see, like, great books at a really cheap price.
Yeah, like in the summer, one of my books of the year, Fact of a Body by Alexandria Marzano-Lesovich, as we discussed in the True Crime episode, was 99p. Like, what can you buy for 99p? Hardly anything. And you got an amazing book for 99p. And obviously, I know this will have knock-on effects on what authors receive in royalties. So I'm not going to be like, yes, it's 100% good. But also think of all the people that will have read it who would not have otherwise have read it.
Yeah. How do you decide what to read next?
If I don't have to read something for this podcast, I don't know. I feel like I look at what I've received recently or things that I have been excited about or I don't know. I feel like if my brother hadn't given me this copy of Devil in the White City recently that I mentioned reading in the last episode, which we are recording at the same time as that episode, so this anecdote is going to be slightly outdated. If he hadn't given me that book this week, I actually don't know what I'd be reading now because I don't feel like there was anything on my little bedside table that I'm like, yep, that's going to be the one. There's things that I'm like, I want to read, either by people that I like or like books that have cute covers or something. But yeah, I didn't have a thing that I was like, yeah. So then when he gave me that, I was like, yep, this is the one. This is the book I'm excited about reading. How about you?
You've reminded me of Waterstones at one day. I overheard these two kind of late teenagers walking through the fiction section. And one of them was like, I really want to read something. I just feel like I want to read something. And her friend straight away was like, okay, oh my God, and just started naming books. And she interrupted. She was like, no. I want to read something I'm excited to read. And I was like, accurate. Yeah. It's so accurate.
Yeah. You can tell me like 50 books, but if none of them spark joy, there's no, like, I'm just not going to read them.
Yeah. In fact, that's right. Marie Kondo, that's how I decide what I'm going to read next.
Yeah. You have to have some like little thing that you're like,
I have to be excited. And I find like, so I have so many books everywhere, especially at the moment. I need a new bookshelf. I need to do a clear out. Like, I have literally books piled up against my sofa. It's a living nightmare. But going away on holiday, I really struggle to decide what to bring because there are so many books that I want to read, but I don't have that like spark of excitement yet.
Yeah.
And quite often I will find all it will take is I'll see someone on Twitter whose opinion I respect might tweet saying like, this is amazing.
And you'll straight away be like, new light.
Bang, yeah. That's the one I'm going to read next.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll have five or six that you're really excited to read and you have like a proper little TBR and you work your way through them. And sometimes you just don't.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of can struggle to keep momentum because I hate not having a book, especially now doing this long commute. I have to have something. I have to have something to read.
Oh my God, it's unthinkable that I would not be reading a book. Like, yeah. You could say to me, what are you reading at any day of the, like, any day of the year, and I would be reading something.
Unless you literally catch me when I have just turned the last page.
Yeah.
And even when I start getting towards the end, I'll have my next book in my bag ready.
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've been, like, fooled before by things that have, like, a long, like, I don't know, or maybe, like, a part of another book.
No, the worst. The yeah, I was going to say, or book club questions.
Yeah.
Some fluff at the end.
That makes you think you've got another 30 pages, and then you're like, what?
Yeah, then it feels like, you know, when you're falling asleep and you, like, have that, yeah, like, falling monkey moment? It's like that.
Yeah, the monkey falling out of the tree. Yeah.
Nightmare.
Don't falling monkey me. This is a note to publishers. Yeah.
Okay, so next is buying books. Your turn. Do you want to read? You can stretch further than that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions now, Alice.
Okay.
Where do you buy? I don't know. I was like, I have to, like, you know, inhabit another persona to ask questions.
Okay.
Where do you buy books?
I buy my books almost exclusively from Waterstones, but I do try and go to independent bookshops as well, and pick up some little treats.
Yeah. I feel like I should try and buy things from independent bookshops more than I do.
I did a bookshop crawl recently with my pal Liv from the Book Nook.
Yep.
Her YouTube channel is great. You should watch her, ship, subscribe, whatever. But we did a bookshop crawl around London and we went to this amazing shop called Words on the Water, which is a canal boat.
Cool.
At King's Cross. It's so awesome. It's so cute.
And is it permanently at King's Cross?
Yeah, they have a permanent mooring now. He used to have to move the shop every 2 weeks.
Yeah, bullshit.
So, like, the dude is really interesting. His shop was amazing. His book choices were really eclectic and cool. And I suddenly remembered, like, the bookshop in Notting Hill, the movie Notting
Hill?
Yeah. That shop closed down. Even though when I worked in Notting Hill, we would get asked every Saturday, at least a dozen times, tourists would ask us where the bookshop is. And basically, people would flock there to take photos, but no fucker bought anything.
Yeah.
So they shut down because they couldn't sustain themselves. So, yeah, I bought a book from Word on the Water specifically because I didn't want to be that tourist.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, it's so cute. I'm going to do a boomie and put it on Instagram, but not actually support
enable you to be alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't really buy books. I either steal them from my parents or people send them to me or I borrow them from you.
Aww.
I need to have a little like amnesty soon where I go through my books. I have a lot of books that belong to other people, but I always know who they belong to. Yeah. Like, I have never forgotten who a book belonged to that I've borrowed. I'm just gonna put that on
and
the
you know
record.
What you can write on her fucking tombstone. Yeah.
Just because I've had your book for 4 years doesn't mean I've forgotten it's your book. I know it's your book. I've just been really lazy about giving it back to you. Yeah, I don't actually buy books that much, which means I'm a little brat about it when I have to. And so just complain a lot about books being expensive.
Because they are. But yeah. You know what? Having spent some time in America, I will never complain about the cost of books again.
Absolutely not.
Lord alive. $17 for a 1980s paperback.
Yeah. So my copy of Forever by Judy Blume was given to me by my foreign rights agent called Janine, who's very cool. I had lunch with her when I was on holiday in New York, and it's a really nice, like, matte paperback, you know, the like floppy kind of paperback. Nice. I really
American
like it.
Floppy ones,
American floppy. And yeah, it retailed for like $16.99, and I was like, this is a children's book. Like, how can children afford to spend $17 on a book that they will probably read in like 2 days? That's outrageous.
I would love to know if anyone listening knows why there is such a big disparity between the cost of paperbacks in America compared to the UK.
Not just the price difference, but the objective value, like the cost of them is so much higher.
I was describing to Bethany earlier that if you think about the cost of pints, that you could buy 2 pints of beer for the cost of a paperback in the UK. You could buy 4 to 5 pints, well, beers in America for the same book.
Yeah, like, why, how much is that book that I've just given you?
Well, this looks like a kind of older edition. Okay, no, $9.99.
Yeah, and that's like a little...
So this, it has French flaps, like it's a nice...
Yeah.
It's a nice book.
Sub £10, that's reasonable for a book, in my opinion.
Anyway.
So which bookshop sections do you like to browse?
Okay. I can't handle you. I'm asking these questions.
Okay, I will ask.
No, continue. You need to
maintain this.
You bring the flavour and the fun, you know? Okay, bookshop sections that I like to browse. I will always go straight to fiction, obviously. Yeah. But then I will also break away, look at teen. I'll look at cookery.
Mm.
I'll look at true crime, maybe. But generally with true crime, I know what I want to read. I'm probably not going to find something by browsing, because most of them are garbage.
Garbage
written by
garbage men.
And that is it. Although, to be honest, also I will walk around a whole bookshop.
Yeah,
I want to like have a little peep at literally everything.
Yeah, just see what's going on.
Yeah, apart from like business, nothing there for me.
Nah. I sometimes find fiction too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too much of it. So I feel like I don't hang out in bookshops that much. I used to go to Waterstones Gower Street either for Bitchlet, the lady reading group that I sporadically should go to more regularly, or In Search of You, maybe, or to go to an event, or I don't know, which I think is a very pleasant shopping experience. I've complained at length about... trying to buy a book in Waterstones Piccadilly, which was very unpleasant.
Yeah, she's going on record.
I won't elaborate my tale, but I did not enjoy that shopping experience at all. But yeah, the sections that I like to look at tend to be, weirdly, like history. Even though I'm not like a history person, I always want to read a non-fiction book that will change my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see, like, so there are things that I want... Okay, I'm going to tell you the things that I want to read about.
Okay, do it.
I want to read a history book about... I want to read a non-fiction book about how... about the history of New York. That's what I want to read.
Yep.
I want to read a non-fiction book about the formation of Italy as a country, because it's only about 150 years old. I want to read about that. I want to read a non-fiction book about the American Civil War and some other stuff. There's loads of shit I want to know.
Yeah.
But I want to pass by a history table that has some book that speaks to me and I'm like, yes, this is the one that I'm going to learn loads of stuff from. But it doesn't happen. So if anyone is listening and can recommend me
a
book on
those...
What
you need to do... Yes. Is go to a shop like Waterstones Gower Street, which specializes in nonfiction, and you need
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I didn't
know Gower Street, because it's near the university, so it's like
the University College London, my alma mater. That was my normal voice. What's wrong with
you? That absolutely was not your normal voice.
Okay, fine. University College London, my alma mater. That was my normal voice.
That was a normal voice, but you'd already, the damage is done.
Okay.
Yeah, but so they specialise in nonfiction. They specialise in academic nonfiction. And they have some incredibly knowledgeable booksellers. This is like me now selling Gower Street. But just go there and ask.
And say, I'm looking for these three things. Like,
who's in today that knows history?
Yeah.
Don't go during a busy period, obviously. But like, go when it's kind of quiet.
I'm going to go on the 23rd of December.
I'm going to aim around lunchtime.
Yeah, I'm going to try and hit lunchtime, the last shopping day before Christmas.
And I'm going to go to the wrong floor.
Yeah, I will. I'll be missing you so much. I will go to the fiction floor and I will ask there. Do you judge a book by its cover?
Absolutely. I fucking live for judging books by their covers. I'm obsessed with it. I think it's a whole job. You know, that's like someone's job is to make amazing book covers. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm stressed out about this, man. Because obviously I have a book coming out in some time. In March 2019, I have a novel coming out. And I'm stressed out that I won't like the cover. Because loads of published authors have been like, yeah, I hate my cover. Because I know that it isn't just about a cool cover. I know that publishers show the cover to, I think it's Tesco's and Waterstones, and if they don't like it, they get a new cover. So I hope my cover's cool.
I hope your cover's cool.
Yeah.
I think, though, that, like, I don't understand how bad covers can happen, to be honest.
What's a cover that you really hate?
The contemporary cover for The Pink Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Which has the original cover is just a beautiful Venice Beach-style pink hotel.
Yep.
They rejected it to put that in the background, in the foreground, put like a sassy woman in like bootcut jeans and heels with a jacket slung over her shoulder, which is in no way representative of the 17-year-old who wears jogging bottoms and then the silk dresses she steals from her mother's funeral. This character does not represent the main character. It doesn't represent the style of the book. It is garbage, and I think the book suffered greatly for it. So that's an example of a book, the cover, that I hate. I understand, I think, why they went in that direction. They were trying to appeal to, like, a more quote-unquote chick-lit audience, which failed, I think. And then I would compare that to something like, do you remember the 50th anniversary cover of The Bell Jar?
Yep, remember it well.
People hated it.
Yeah, people really hated that.
I liked it.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem intrinsically with trying to appeal to a kind of chick-lit audience, because I don't intrinsically think that chick-lit is bad. But it just, that was a bad cover. The Bell Jar was a good cover. I liked it. Did you like it?
I don't really remember. I remember there being a fuss about it, but I don't remember what it looked like.
It was just like, it was a woman looking at her reflection in a compact mirror.
Yeah. I do remember that. I feel like I like a good cover, but I wouldn't read something if it had a bad cover. The only thing I'm a bit of a, like, snob about is film tie-in editions. I would rather not read a film tie-in edition, just because I think the problem is that film posters are less nice than book covers.
Yeah.
Like, I think that is just my problem, is that there will be no reason why I would ever choose a film tie-in edition over a non-tie-in edition.
See, I guess that's fair. I don't think I would ever choose a film tie-in.
Yeah.
And I guess I just feel quite indifferent.
Yeah.
And although I will absolutely be attracted to books because of their covers, a great example of one would be Evening Primrose, which, amazing cover, that pink cover was very in vogue.
Yeah.
The pink cover with the kind of green fronds. I was seeing that book and it had such a memorable cover. When I first started seeing it on Instagram and on Twitter, it was sticking with me. So by the time people had actually started tweeting about the content of the book, I was already kind of sold on it.
Yeah. You were on board because of the cover of the book. So this is a really great book that came out this year called Evening Primrose by Kopano Matulwa, who is a South African writer. And I think it's her first...
No, it's not. It wasn't her debut.
Okay.
It's her first.
Sure,
I think it's the first one that's come out in the UK.
She has had other
books.
It's very good. I really liked this. And I think, so I read it back to back with the excellent Conversations with Friends by Sally Rooney, which has an excellent cover.
Also has an excellent cover, yeah.
Which is an Alex Katz painting. And I just feel like, why do a bad cover when you can do a cover like Evening Primrose or Conversations with Friends? But they are thematically not dissimilar about like kind of young women and bodies and things. Do you own multiple editions of the same book?
Oh, this is a perfect... God, I'm so good at writing questions. Yeah, it leads on perfectly. This is something I used to do. So again, no shade. I know there are some people who I love dearly who are collectors in that way, but it's something that I just grew out of. So I remember I had every cover I could get my hands on of The Beach, which was my favorite book from the age of about 16 to about 25. I think I had 5 or 6 editions.
That's so wild.
Yeah. Honestly, I had 5 or 6 editions. I absolutely loved that book. And I think I got to the stage where I realized, like, I wanted other people to read it. And so I started giving away my multiples. I started off just lending, but then, you know, someone then like left the country and took the book with me, and obviously I didn't really care. I had other copies, and I also had kind of thought to myself, I can just rebuy them. And then I think I got to the point where I just thought, why I don't need to do that. Why would I do that? So now, I don't have the space, I don't have the real estate to have multiple copies of the same book.
Yeah, no
B
way.
I don't fetishize the physical object in the way that I did as a teenager. So I don't really care about having multiple copies of the same book. The only occasions in which I do have multiple copies is when I have a proof, and then I've ended up buying
the real deal.
Do you collect editions?
No.
No.
Not at all. If I've read it, I've read, like, I don't know, I just, yeah, I read the book.
When Alex, my fiancé, when Alex and I merged our books, when we moved in together, we got rid of almost all our duplicates. The only thing we got stuck on was Harry Potter.
Really?
We both want to keep our childhood editions.
Yeah, then keep them.
Yeah, well, so we have.
Make your mum look after them. That's what I'd do. I've got my Harry Potter's at my parents'
house. Got enough of my shit at her house. It is an area of contention.
Okay, Gina, ignore that.
I'm not going to put them there.
Yeah, when I moved in with my BF, my fiancé, but we don't, yeah, my boyfriend, I really thought we would have a lot more overlap in our book collections. Mm. The only book that we both owned was...
The only one? There was only one
book that we both owned.
Oh my God, yeah. What was it?
Weirdly, it's The Plays of Joe Orton.
Okay.
That's literally it.
That's wild.
Yeah, we don't like the same books.
See, me and Alex don't have much overlap, but we still had...
Some overlap.
Yeah, we still had probably maybe 15 or 20 books.
That's so wild.
Almost all of them contemporary classics. Like, we had 3 copies of Catcher in the Rye. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, stuff like that.
I was genuinely shocked. But then the more I thought about it, the more I was like, we never read the same stuff. So it makes... cool. Well, that's kind
of... Is that the last question?
Yeah. We've been chatting a while, so probably is the last question.
Right.
We will be back in 2 weeks, like we always are. You can hit us up online. I am at Bethany Rutter. Alice is
at Smoking Tofu, no G.
On Twitter.com. We collectively are What Page Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can email us at whatpagepod@gmail.com. Tweet us, email us thoughts. We're interested in them all.
Get in touch. Say hi.
Yeah, please say hi. It's just me and Alice, really, just chatting away. See you next time.
See you, bye.